Welcome to Creation, Myth, or Miracle. This is your host, ex-atheist Richard Walker. Greetings to all of you who share a curiosity as to what might really be true. Today we're going to talk a bit about a book that I haven't yet finished reading, but I've enjoyed thus far. And I want to share with you a review of both the book and the reaction to the book written by a journalist named Warren Nunn over at creation.com. His article is titled, A Different Way of Thinking, Thomas Nagel Considers the Mind. Reviewing the reviewers, how atheists are trying to downplay and deconstruct fellow atheist Thomas Nagel's latest book, Mind and Cosmos. So picture the scene. A creationist or intelligent design proponent publishes a book questioning evolution. It gets dismissive reviews and vitriolic responses from many in scientific circles. Well, we've certainly seen that happen many times. Adjust the scenario slightly. A respected philosopher who is an avowed atheist and Darwin supporter publishes a book questioning aspects of evolution. It gains wide media exposure, numerous long and ponderous reviews, and, while strongly criticized by some, is cautiously well accepted. Something not right here? The first mentioned scenario is all too familiar, even expected. But the second one is curious, if not a little refreshing. So what's going on? Philosopher Thomas Nagel's book, Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Concept of Nature is Almost Certainly False, has caused Darwin defenders to dig deep to contest the author's claims. Well, who is Thomas Nagel? He is the 75-year-old professor of philosophy at New York University. He was born into a Jewish family in Belgrade, Serbia. So what has Nagel said to get pulses racing? He's basically asking whether the human mind can explain itself and says evolutionary biology is wrong in its explanations, hence the book's challenging subtitle about false claims. One of Nagel's observations is telling, and I want to share this quote a bit more fully than did Warren Nunn in his article. Nagel wrote, I would like to defend the untutored reaction of incredulity to the reductionist neo-Darwinian account of the origin and evolution of life. It is prima facie highly implausible that life as we know it is the result of a sequence of physical accidents together with the mechanism of natural selection. We are expected to abandon this naive response, not in favor of a fully worked out physical-chemical explanation, but in favor of an alternative that is really a schema for explanation, supported by some examples. What is lacking, to my knowledge, is a credible argument that the story has a non-negligible probability of being true. I thoroughly enjoy the way Nagel stated that. First, he admits the obvious reaction to the idea that life originated from non-life by materialistic means is incredulity. It simply doesn't make sense. Furthermore, the types of changes that supposedly occurred over evolutionary time and resulted in the entire diversity of living things that we see, including humans, including our minds, is also not a believable scenario. Well, the knowledgeable evolutionist answer to that objection should be, let me explain the details to you. And yet it is a detailed explanation that is precisely what is missing, according to Thomas Nagel, atheist. He said all we're really given is a schema for explanation. That means a story, supported by some examples, more stories. And Nagel says what's lacking is a credible argument that the story has a non-negligible probability of being true. He means any real chance at all of being true. That is what's lacking. So yes, we are told a story, but It simply doesn't make sense. And we are never given a detailed explanation. Sounds a bit like the statements from chemist James Tour, who said, "I don't understand how macroevolution could work, and nobody is able to explain it to me." Nagel goes on about this problem. He says, "There are two questions. First, given what is known about the chemical basis of biology and genetics, what is the likelihood that self-reproducing life forms should have come into existence spontaneously on the early Earth solely through the operation of the laws of physics and chemistry? The second question is about the sources of variation in the evolutionary process that was set in motion once life began. In the available geological time since the first life forms appeared on Earth, what is the likelihood that, as a result of physical accident, a sequence of viable genetic mutations should have occurred that was sufficient to permit natural selection to produce the organisms that actually exist?" So it's pretty clear that Nagel is challenging the standard unsubstantiated storytelling approach to explaining the answers to these two very important questions. Now, as far as where Nagel is coming from, he states it pretty plainly. He writes, "My skepticism is not based on religious belief or on a belief in any definite alternative. It is just a belief that the available scientific evidence, in spite of the consensus of scientific opinion, does not in this matter rationally require us to subordinate the incredulity of common sense. That is especially true with regard to the origin of life." And Nagel is quite willing to challenge orthodoxy. Consider this statement. "In thinking about these questions, I've been stimulated by criticisms of the prevailing scientific world picture from a very different direction. The attack on Darwinism mounted in recent years by the defenders of intelligent design. Even though writers like Michael Behe and Stephen Mayer are motivated, at least in part, by their religious beliefs, the empirical arguments they offer against the likelihood that the origin of life and its evolutionary history can be fully explained by physics and chemistry are of great interest in themselves. Even if one is not drawn to the alternative of an explanation by the actions of a designer, the problems that these iconoclasts pose for the orthodox scientific consensus should be taken seriously. They do not deserve the scorn with which they are commonly met. It is manifestly unfair." I completely agree with that sentiment. If there were real answers in the realm of materialistic Darwinism, they would simply provide the rational answers to the objections and questions raised by the ID proponents. But they have no such rational answers. Furthermore, Nagel makes a very good point. It doesn't matter what the motivation is when someone writes their logical reasoning for arguing for a particular position. The argument can still be evaluated to see if it makes sense or not. I mean, after all, I'm reading a book by Thomas Nagel. He's an atheist. "I used to be one, but am no longer. However, suppose I took the approach of saying, well, obviously, he's motivated by his atheism, so I will ignore whatever he writes." That would not be a very intelligent way to approach things. Now, that doesn't mean that I read what he wrote or anybody else and simply take it as truth. No, I still use the brain that I have, and I still evaluate the rationality of their arguments and look for the details. Do they really answer the questions, or do they just wave their hands around and yell loudly? We're discussing both the book written by atheist Thomas Nagel titled Mind and Cosmos: Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Life is Almost Certainly False, as well as the reaction of some of the reviewers to this book. And thus far, we've noted from Nagel's own words that he is challenging orthodoxy, is looking for a real answer to the questions of the origin of life and the diversity of life that we observe around us and things like the existence of the human mind. He's not seeing any answers from within the standard consensus evolutionary story that hold together. And as Warren Nunn mentions, he stands out from his peers by being willing to at least hear the claims of intelligent design proponents. But his hostility to young Earth, that is biblical creation, is obvious. Nagel wrote the following, ID is very different from creation science. To an outsider at least, it does not seem to depend on massive distortion of the evidence and hopeless incoherencies in its interpretation. Nor does it depend, like biblical literalism, on the assumption that the truth of ID is immune to empirical evidence to the contrary. So it's pretty darn clear Nagel is not a creationist, isn't it? But despite his adherence to Darwinian orthodoxy, he did not escape the wrath of the scientific establishment, and reviewers devoted thousands of words to do so. In writing about 3,500 words of review, Brian Leiter and Michael Weisberg describe Nagel's book as an instrument of mischief. They observe, Nagel's arguments against reductionism are quixotic, and his arguments against naturalism are unconvincing. He aspires to develop rival alternative conceptions to what he calls the materialistic neo-Darwinian worldview, yet he never clearly articulates this rival conception, nor does he give us any reason to think that the present right-thinking consensus will come to seem laughable in a generation or two, as he said. Mind and Cosmos is certainly an apt title for Nagel's philosophical meditations, but his subtitle, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False, is highly misleading. Now notice something inherent in the logic of those reviewers. You can't claim that the existing neo-Darwinian worldview isn't substantiated unless you provide a clearly articulated rival conception, which would, of course, in their minds have to be a materialistic conception. So it's interesting because that basically boils down to the logic of saying, don't show me materialism is false unless you can provide me an alternative. And of course, for an atheist, there really is no alternative. Other than perhaps the one taken by Francis Crick and others, once again, aliens did it. Life exists here on Earth because it somehow came into being somewhere else. I guess chemistry and physics must be different there, and it must be able to occur. And then that life was deliberately sent to the Earth, and the Earth was seeded by aliens, and that's where everything comes from. That's actually a more consistent story than the standard neo-Darwinian abiogenesis combination. Why? Because inherently in that story, they deny the notion of uniformity. Inherently in that explanation, it must be believed that elsewhere in this universe, things happen differently, and thus life could have arisen from non-life. Because from what we know in the laboratory, it could not have happened here. Let's take a look at one more review. Science philosopher Elliot Sober wrote about 4,400 words in his review, including this, current science may suffer from fundamental flaws, but Nagel has not made a convincing case that this is so. And even if there are serious explanatory defects in our worldview, I don't see how Nagel's causally inexplicable teleology can be a plausible remedy. In saying this, I realize that Nagel is trying to point out the way to a scientific revolution, and that my reactions may be mired in presuppositions that Nagel is trying to transcend. If Nagel is right, our descendants will look back on him as a prophet whom namesayers such as me were unable to recognize. Sober uses an interesting phrase that I'd like to think about for a moment here. He mentions Nagel's, quote, causally inexplicable teleology. Well, from an atheist perspective, that's a good point. There isn't any cause. It is inexplicable to say there's a cause for the teleology from a materialistic worldview, because matter itself cannot be the cause. So if any teleology is required in order to explain what we observe around us, what this really points to is a weakness and insufficiency within the materialistic worldview. It lacks a sufficient cause. And Sober hints at this when he mentions that my reactions may be mired in presuppositions that Nagel is trying to transcend. Well, yes, it is mired in presuppositions. It's mired in the materialistic presupposition. I'm not sure that Nagel is trying to transcend that, at least not consciously, because he is still an avowed atheist. A few years ago, the, quote, world's most notorious atheist, Antony Flew, went down a similar line of reasoning. He paid attention to the arguments presented by the ID proponents. He looked at the inconvincing arguments coming from the consensus worldview, abiogenesis, and Darwinian evolution, and he reached a point of saying, it really doesn't work, and I admit it doesn't work, and I am therefore no longer an atheist, but rather a theist. Now, he did not identify the God, if you will. What he did identify was that atheism is insufficient, and it requires theism to explain what we observe. If Nagel continues down his road of thought, he is going to be forced to reach that conclusion, or he's going to have to deny his own arguments. We'll look some more at the reaction to Nagel's book in just a moment. Let's take a look at a second article over at creation.com written by Warren Nunn titled, Thomas Nagel, the Atheist Who Dared to Question Materialism, a reviewer reveals why so many academics are upset with one of their own. At a gathering of philosophers and scientists that included Daniel Dennett and Richard Dawkins, a workshop on naturalism turned into an all-out attack on Nagel, a professor of law and philosophy at New York University. Nagel's claim that materialist concept of nature is wrong was too much for the workshop participants, according to Andrew Ferguson, a senior editor at the Weekly Standard. In an article titled The Heretic, Ferguson discussed what happened in the workshop and also considered why Nagel's book so angered his critics. While Ferguson's report is challenging reading, he asks probing questions of his own about materialism in general, while sometimes poking fun at philosophers and scientists. At first, Nagel's name was not mentioned at the workshop until after Dennett said some philosophers had, quote, refused to incorporate the naturalistic conclusions of science into their philosophizing, continuing to play around with outmoded ideas like morality and sometimes even the soul, end quote. Now, before we continue with Ferguson's take on what occurred, think about what Dennett said. Some philosophers refuse to incorporate the naturalistic conclusions of science into their philosophizing? Wait a minute. Naturalism is an assumption. It is an ideological or religious belief. Naturalistic conclusions are built solidly on top of naturalism. Well, if those conclusions are insufficient, are we still supposed to accept them and use those as the basis of our philosophizing? Absolutely yes, according to atheists like Daniel Dennett. In other words, you are not allowed to challenge naturalistic conclusions. Why not? Because that is akin to challenging their religious belief in naturalism. That's why. You want to see people get upset? Do that with an atheist. Well, back to Ferguson's take on this scene. There it was, Tom Nagel, whose Mind and Cosmos was already causing a derangement among philosophers in England and America. Dennett sighed at the mention of the name, more in sorrow than in anger. His disgust seemed to drain from him, replaced by resignation. He looked at the table. Yes, said Dennett, there is that. Around the table, with the PowerPoint humming, they all seemed to heave a sad sigh, a deep, workshop sigh. Tom, oh Tom, how did we lose Tom? Ferguson goes on to discuss why academics, scientists, and philosophers are so angry at Nagel for, as one put it, his alleged shoddy reasoning. He notes some of the barbs. Thomas Nagel is of absolutely no importance on this subject, wrote one. He's a self-contradictory idiot, opined another. Ferguson is far more open-minded than Nagel's critics, but at the same time holds fast to evolutionary orthodoxy in a revealing observation. You don't have to be a biblical fundamentalist or a young earth creationist or an intelligent design enthusiast, I'm none of the above for what it's worth, to find mind and cosmos exhilarating. Ferguson is taken by what he sees as Nagel's challenging approach. His working assumption is, in today's intellectual climate, radical. If the materialist neo-Darwinian orthodoxy contradicts common sense, then this is a mark against the orthodoxy, not against common sense. When a chain of reasoning leads us to deny the obvious, we should double-check the chain of reasoning before we give up on the obvious. I think that's a pretty good way to sum up the basic approach that Nagel takes, and it is the basic approach that any intelligent human being should take to any subject. Here's a very important point that Ferguson makes. Nagel's touchier critics have accused him of launching an assault on science when really it is an assault on the non-scientific uses to which materialism has been put. And Ferguson makes another observation that would certainly not win him any friends in the Dennett-Dawkins camp. Applied beyond its own usefulness as a scientific methodology, materialism is, as Nagel suggests, self-evidently absurd. Mind and Cosmos can be read as an extended paraphrase of Orwell's famous insult. One has to belong to the intelligentsia to believe things like that. No ordinary man could be such a fool. Well, I don't know about you, but that's the first time I'd heard Orwell's insult. I like that quite a bit. One has to belong to the intelligentsia to believe things like that. No ordinary man could be such a fool. That's an interesting statement. What's also blindingly obvious by this entire episode relating to the reaction to Thomas Nagel's book is that it simply doesn't matter how many times you avow yourself as an atheist, no matter how many times you make that pronouncement, if you dare to exercise logic that questions materialistic conclusions or naturalistic conclusions of science, you are a pariah. You are a, quote, self-contradictory idiot. You are of no importance on the subject. Notice none of these people seem to even attempt to deal with the logic presented by Nagel. Why do you think that is? It's because the actual argumentation, the actual logic, the actual reasoning applied on top of the premises isn't what's really important here. What's really important is that we must not allow any line of reasoning to challenge the materialistic worldview. And by the way, this is precisely why the scientific books and articles written by the proponents of intelligent design are ignored and attacked and treated as just pure garbage, because they would challenge the materialistic worldview, the sufficiency of the materialistic story to explain what we observe. And it doesn't matter how obvious their conclusions are. You've got to stick to the orthodox materialistic worldview, or you are in trouble with intelligentsia. Once again, this is so reminiscent of the statement by evolutionary biologist Richard Lewontin. We take the side of science in spite of the patent absurdity of some of its constructs because we have a prior commitment, a commitment to materialism. Moreover, that materialism is absolute, for we cannot allow a divine foot in the door. What's pretty clear is that unless you are willing to deny the obvious, then there is evidence for some form of creator in the world around us. The Apostle Paul pointed that out in the first chapter of his letter to the Romans, and furthermore said, because that evidence is there, those who deny the creator are without excuse. seekcreationmythormiracle.com.